You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic. I'm your host, Haley Peffer, and my guest today is Dr. Shannon Pratt Phillips of North Carolina State University. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey there. I'm glad to be here.
So our topic today is one that I think most people have dealt with at one point or another, and that's managing and feeding easy-keeping horses. So could you start by just defining what easy-keeper means for those who might not quite understand it?
Sure. So we use the term easy-keeper to describe a horse that has a lower metabolic rate and therefore tends to require fewer calories to be able to maintain their body weight. And so when they consume what might be considered a typical diet for another horse, they tend to gain weight relatively easily. A lot of people might say that they get fat on air, or they might have relatively low feeding rates and they just tend to gain weight. And it can be really difficult for people to feed and manage these horses so that they are able to maintain a more appropriate body condition.
So is there a way to distinguish, or is there a difference between a naturally thrifty horse or one that's overweight due to how we're feeding it or managing it?
So I don't really think that thrifty horses have an excuse to be overweight. I think even our thrifty types of horses, maybe our breeds that tend to be hardier, like our ponies, some of our draft breeds or crosses, I don't know if that gives them an excuse to be overweight, just because they do have a tendency to be easy keepers. And then we do also have our horses that are truly overweight because of overfeeding. I think regardless of how a horse gets there, it's still an important health concern, whether they might have that natural body type and body metabolism due to their bloodlines to be, you know, this hardy, thrifty type. I think still you have to treat both types of horses as an overweight horse.
Absolutely. And how often do you see these easy keepers with underlying metabolic conditions like insulin dysregulation or equine metabolic syndrome? And when should maybe a red flag go off in an owner's mind that their horse might have one of these conditions?
Well, so with insulin dysregulation, it's kind of interesting because you could have horses that are overweight and have very normal glucose metabolism and insulin function. And then you could even have lean horses that have abnormal insulin function. So I think it's really important to potentially look at all of your horses periodically. But I think anything that is perhaps a breed that might be more prone to having some insulin dysregulation, or if you do have a horse that's overweight, it's probably important to go ahead and just add a resting insulin concentration screening to your yearly vet checkup. And then if you have a horse that you really think might be suspect and you're really trying to get on top of it and manage it, it's probably a good idea to monitor those insulin concentrations more frequently. I think a resting insulin concentration is a great screening tool. I think it's okay if it can be done sort of after horses been eating some hay, but if they've had any grain or even pasture, it might falsely elevate that, and it might be a little bit trickier to really get a feel for what's happening. I also kind of like the idea of either doing a dynamic type of test where you would go and take a resting sample and then give the horse some sugar like a Caro syrup test that your veterinarian would administer, and then you take a follow-up sample and see how the horses responded to that. But I think it's also really important to see how a horse responds to their daily regime, their daily diet. So I've been encouraging some horse owners to actually take a blood sample after the horse is being fed their breakfast or dinner, so that we can see, and you know, sort of maybe an hour after they've eaten, and be able to see how their own diet affects that horse specifically, because that's what would be raising their insulin concentrations in the first place that could be problematic. And some horses might have some low levels of insulin dysregulation, but their diet and their regular feeding might not really pose a problem to them. And then you might have a horse that really might not seem so bad, but the diet really does cause an insulin spike. And then that would be something to monitor.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that idea a lot. And I might have to try it because I have two ponies. So we all know that forage is the base of most horses' diets. And for horses that might gain weight easily or are considered easy keepers, how can owners balance the need for the horse's relatively continuous forage intake with calorie control? I know this is really difficult. I struggle with it myself with these ponies.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing to do is to test your hay. And I know sometimes that can be challenging if you're at a facility that gets new hay frequently, but hopefully whenever they do get the new hay in, maybe it's from at least the same source, same area. And then at least you can have sort of a decent idea of what the sugar content would actually be. And it's important to test at places that actually will measure the non-structural carbohydrate content. And so a good place for that is Equianalytical. And that is a good testing lab, and it's relatively inexpensive to go and get a feel for what your hay is like. And then from there, it might tell you, okay, I might not want to feed this hay, or maybe, and so maybe you'd want to find something different, or you might find some strategies to manage the sugar content of that hay. But I think it's just really important to know what you're dealing with first, because that can kind of help you in terms of how you're actually going to offer it. And so again, for easy keepers, ideally that non-structural carbohydrate in the forages is going to be ideally less than 10, but certainly less than, you know, 12 to 14. Once it gets higher than that, it's going to be pretty hard to manage for an easier keeper that might be prone to some insulin dysfunction. So, but from there, you know, soaking is a really great option, because soaking the hay will remove a lot of those water soluble carbohydrates, those water soluble sugars. And then if you throw out that water, then that hay is going to be lower in sugar and then also lower in calories. So that can be a really good, effective way to reduce the sugars. And soaking reduces sugars far more than steaming does. So if you're used to steaming, you might consider soaking as well or instead. And then, you know, the slow feeders are also really great options, because that way you can have forage in front of them, but it just slows down how much they eat it. And so that can be really effective to help prevent any swings that we might see in sugar or insulin after eating. So if they were to eat even a, you know, a higher sugar type of hay, if they were to eat that really quickly, you might get a bit of a spike in glucose and insulin. But if you can force them to eat that a little bit slower, it kind of mitigates and blunts that rise in glucose and insulin. And so slow feeders that, you know, can prolong the feeding so that the horse's got food in front of them all the time, but then you're maybe feeding a limited amount of hay, then that could be really great for those easy keepers. I also think, you know, getting into the habit of weighing your hay is going to be really critical for the easy keepers, because that's really going to require calorie counting. and every flake of hay is a little bit different in terms of weight. And you can do that just with a kitchen scale. You can even use your slow feeder hay net or even a regular hay net with a fish or a luggage scale. And then you can, just get a feel if you want to be feeding your horse, 6 pounds sort of during the day, maybe 8 pounds at night or whatever it is, then you can really get a feel for how much that is. I also think, if you've got a horse that's at pasture, I think that's going to be really important to look at some of those grazing muzzles just to slow that intake.
You mentioned soaking hay, and I think this is a question that we get a lot. Is there an ideal water temperature for soaking hay and an ideal soaking time?
That's a great question. And so the University of Minnesota actually did a really nice series of studies that you can look up. But ultimately, about 30 minutes with tap water, whatever comes out of the tap is fine. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of difference if you increase the temperature of the water. And then if you start to soak it longer, you can actually start to leach out some minerals and things. So you might not want to do that. So just soak it for maybe 30 minutes and then pull it out. I mean, the goal is really to just reduce the sugars. So anything that you do is going to be better than just giving them the hay on its own, especially if it is slightly higher in sugar.
And you also mentioned horses that might be on pasture. I think everybody knows to use a grazing muzzle, but do you have any other tips for managing these horses who tend to be overweight when they have access to pasture?
Yeah, so I kind of have a love-hate relationship with pasture for our overweight horses, because if a horse is really overweight and we're trying to implement a calorie restriction diet, it's really difficult to calculate how many calories they're taking in while they're at pasture. And so if you do have an overweight horse and you really want to be effective at making it lose weight, you really can't have it at pasture because you can't count those calories. And so that would require a dry lot and then just providing them with hay. If you do have a horse that, you're really just trying to keep an eye on, then some pasture might be okay. For those horses, definitely a grazing muzzle. You might also consider the timing of grazing too. Sugars in pastures are going to increase throughout the day with photosynthesis from the sunlight. And so sugar concentrations tend to increase and get pretty high by about 3 to 4, 5 to 6 in the afternoon, depending on, where you are in the daylight hours, et cetera. But they can get quite high during the late afternoon. And so maybe it means that you only turn out your horses earlier in the morning before those sugar concentrations get too high. But again, if you have a horse that really is overweight and it's got some insulin dysregulation, maybe it's had laminitis before, those horses really should not be on pasture at all. And I know that's awful, but laminitis is far worse. And a horse that has had laminitis before is always going to be at higher risk of developing it again. And so I kind of say that they shouldn't get any pasture at all, ever.
Yeah, I think a lot of people hear that and they are surprised because I think the common idea is that horses should be on pasture. And I get that a lot because I do keep my ponies on a dry lot. And people always wonder why I'm doing that to them. But I think people might need to understand more that sometimes it's for their own good.
Yeah. And you can do other things to maybe give them that sort of grazing type of feeling by, if you are giving them hay, maybe you could spread it out around the paddock. You could have your slow feeders in different corners so that they have to kind of meander around. You could also have the hay in one area, the water in another area, maybe a salt block in another area so that they really do have to walk around a little bit. So it's a little bit more like they might be on pasture. So that might be a way to sort of mimic that sort of grazing type of feeling.
Yeah, those are all really good ideas. I like them. And sometimes I do that where I'll space out the hay and water for my guys. Just maybe it makes me feel better more than them. But
well, and I think it's a good thing to do and to try to get them, you know, because again, it helps them move around too, which can also burn some calories. And then, of course, if they aren't eating any pasture, then you do have to kind of take note that especially the vitamins like vitamin E and then beta carotene that is going to be converted to vitamin E in the body. You just have to acknowledge that they're not going to be getting that from the pasture and then make sure that they're getting that from the rest of the diet. And maybe that needs to be supplemented depending on what else they're getting.
That leads me perfectly to my next question for you, which is when we're restricting a horse's diet for weight control, how can we be sure that they're getting all the vitamins and minerals that they need?
Yeah, so that's a great point. Again, if you test your hay and you know how much they're feeding, you can easily calculate how much protein the horse is getting as well. And then from there, it can help you make some really strategic feeding decisions. So if you have a horse that, and maybe you're feeding them sort of a lower quality hay on purpose so that it's actually got fewer calories per unit weight, it might also have lower protein content. And then you would probably want to, again, if you don't think the horse is getting enough protein in their diet, a ration balancer is a really great tool. So ration balancers are basically just protein, vitamins, and minerals. And so they're fed at a relatively low feeding rate. So maybe your ponies might only require half a pound to 1 pound per day. Maybe your bigger horses might need 1 pound to maybe 2 pounds, depending on their exercise level. But it's a relatively low feeding rate. And then because of that, it's also going to, you know, have fewer calories associated with that. And so those are really excellent types of feeds for our easy keepers. If you think the protein is okay, then you can even get away with just a vitamin mineral balancer. Or supplement that doesn't necessarily have all of the added protein as well.
So when we're talking about these easy keeping horses, I think a lot of people might also not perceive their horse's weight well because they see them every day. And I think, you know, a lot of people have the mentality of like pleasantly plump.
Yes.
So what's the most accurate way for owners and managers to track changes in body condition over time, especially for those horses that they're looking at every single day and they might have a bias towards?
Yeah. So a couple of things along there in terms of body condition scoring, you know, to me, I'm kind of strict, but there's no such thing as pleasantly plump. If a horse has a body condition score greater than a 6 out of 9 on the 1 to 9 Hennecke scale, then I think that horse is kind of getting to be at risk for some issues. So I do like them to be at 6 or below. And I know it's really hard for people to look at their own horse and evaluate. So I think it's a good idea for a facility to kind of target maybe 1 or 2 people, maybe it's the trainer, maybe it's the owner, to be sort of in charge of doing body condition scoring and doing it maybe once a month. And I think it's important to take very good notes and actually write things down and even take photos over time. But make sure that whoever is doing it is actually feeling the horse as well, because you can really get to be quite good and critical, especially even within a single horse, to kind of know where they tend to carry their fat, whether they tend to carry it across the crest of their neck or along their ribs or over their tailhead area. And so by getting used to feeling that kind of fat and where it is and where it might be going away, hopefully, I think somebody who has that practice can really develop that eye better, and only doing it once a month can help them sort of be a little bit more objective about doing it. I also really encourage horse owners, or again, sort of a targeted person, to take measurements. And so you can do this with just even a measuring tape. You usually have to get sort of the longer ones that go up to you know, 100 inches. But if you have one of these, you can do a belly girth circumference. So that would be at where the horse's umbilicus is, and do a vertical, you know, tape around their abdomen. And then you could also do one at the traditional heart girth area. But by taking both, and you could also do a circumference around their neck length. So you can measure their neck kind of from the hairs at their withers all the way up to the pole, and then find that, you know, middle measurement. So if their neck is 22 inches, then at 11 inches, do a circumference around the neck as well. And then you've got values that you can track over time and might be a little bit more telling than just by looking at body condition score and looking at pictures.
So we're coming to the end of our time, and this brings me to my final question for you, which is, what are some common mistakes, management or feeding wise, that you see people make with these easy keepers?
So a couple things. You know, I think underestimating the value of good quality hay. You know, they really can get a lot of good nutrients from their hay, but you only know that if you test it. So not knowing how much hay a horse is eating, not testing it, just really leaves a big question mark in terms of, you know, their overall diet. I think people tend to underestimate how dangerous pasture can be. And so that's one that I think people really need to monitor. And again, if they do have a horse that might be at risk, maybe you're taking insulin concentrations, taking blood samples to measure insulin concentrations while the horses are at pasture, and maybe tracking that over time. And particularly in times of the year where, like in the spring and fall, where those sugars kind of tend to creep up a little bit more. I also think people tend to overestimate how much exercise their horses are getting. You know, if you do have an overweight horse, they tend to be lazier because they're just carrying around extra weight. It's like these people walking around with the weighted vest now. It makes it harder for them to exercise. And so they might be lazier. And so then that's harder for a person to get them to get a good exercise workout. And so I think it's really important to up the exercise that these horses are getting, even if it's just hand walking every day. If you have some kind of exerciser, then that's certainly helpful, but getting them out as much as possible is really effective to get them to start burning some calories. We also have some muscle metabolism benefits from getting some exercise in. And so I think really trying to up the exercise in some of these horses is going to be really, really critical. Doing hill work, walking over poles can be really great. Even adding some hills or some poles into a pasture you know, a dry lot can also be pretty effective. There are lots of great pasture strategies and dry lot strategies that you can find online to, you know, to help design a pasture or a dry lot that can incorporate some natural exercise into that. I guess another feeding mistake is perhaps even over supplementing. You know, I think it's important to really look at your horse's diet or hire a nutritionist to look at your horse's diet and really be kind of critical about what they're feeding and just making sure that they are getting all of the nutrients that they need and not, you know, certainly not missing anything, but also it's pretty easy to overdo some of these things too. So, you know, really looking critically at the horse's diet is going to be really helpful for that weight management.
I really like that you mentioned how simple some of the exercises can be. I think a lot of people might overthink it a little too much. And, you know, if I'm not exercising the horse for hours every day, you know, it's not worth doing. But it sounds like you can make it relatively simple and make it work for whatever kind of setup you have at your barn.
Yeah. And I think even if you have a horse that might have been had some laminitis and maybe it's not sound enough to go off and trot, if it can walk, you could you really incorporate some hill work. You can even do things like walking up a hill and then stopping halfway and just standing there for a little bit, because that's still going to engage some muscles, even if they're not actually even moving forward. And you can do that going up and down a hill, stopping on the way up, stopping on the way down. And, you know, again, even walking over poles, just trying to encourage a little bit more muscle use, even as they're just walking. And then even as you're preparing to get on, you can do some stretches and things like that, that will engage some muscles and, you know, still burn a few calories and still be really good for these guys.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, but it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for joining me.
You bet. Thank you so much.
And thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend. Hi, everyone. I'm hopping back on today to let you know that the Stable Management Podcast will be taking a short winter break during the month of January. We'll be back with fresh episodes, new interviews, and plenty of real-world tips starting February 1st. Thank you for listening, for supporting the show, and for being part of our stable management community. Stay warm and enjoy this time with your horses.